Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, it sounds like it was a great show last night.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. And we want to, on behalf of everybody here at Fighting Words Network, want to thank Kathy Duva and Ellen Haley for their kindness and for arranging our press credentials and for, you know, allowing us to do our jobs properly. So we thank them very much. They put on a great show. They're a class act.
They are.
Absolutely, absolutely. The promotion was wonderful, and we were treated wonderfully. We had a lot of access, which was very, very good. And we got a lot of information.
We had Kathy on Wednesday night, on our Wednesday night program, and she said she will come back on this program. We're going to give her a couple of weeks to get situated, but she does have a big program coming up in, I believe it's May, up at the casino up in Bethlehem. And you guys will get credentialed for that, and you're also getting credentials for the end of April down at Dover Downs with Dave's got another big program going on.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, I'd imagine Kathy might want to take just a few days off because she just had two pretty big shows back-to-back with Kovalev last week and then her own promotion. Co-promoter Russell Peltz, who we actually sat next to and talked a very little bit of boxing with, and Joe Hand, Amir Mansour's manager. So she's been pretty busy these last couple of weeks. So I would imagine she might want to, you know, a few days off.
Yeah, when I talked to her on I talked to Ellen on Wednesday afternoon. She had done like six radio shows before she got to us. So
yeah.
she really must be worn out. But we really appreciate everything that the, as we call her, the First Lady of Boxing does for the sport and for everything she's done for our staff. Well,
and, you know, I stressed it, too. What Kathy Duva is really doing, too, is she's kind of keeping East Coast boxing alive on a national level as well. So I really want to commend her for that because most of the big shows coming from the East Coast are main event produced shows.
Right. And,
definitely,
you know,
in the tri-state area.
When you go back to it, all the way back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, Philadelphia was the hub of East Coast boxing. Not too far from where you guys were, just a few blocks down, was the Blue Horizon, and that's like the there and less than a mile down from where you were was the Clover Lake Gym at Broad and Lehigh, which was where the great Joe Frazier trained.
You know, it's the Kathy Peltz and the Kathy Duvas and the Russell Peltz who's kind of cultivated the audience that that you see Golden Boy, you know, now kind of taking advantage of in New York, you know, with the New York boxing scene. It's always been a big, big boxing scene in New York, but it's really the Kathy Duvas and the Joe Peltz who's kept kind of Philadelphia and New Jersey alive that really cultivated this East Coast boxing thing that's going on today again.
Yeah, I did talk to Russell. He is going to be on with us on our Wednesday night show. He and one of our partners, Don Henderson, who used to be the sports director at CAU, and he was the voice of the Sixers, the voice of the Temple Owls, and for a short time of the Philadelphia Eagles, are very good friends. And he's going to come on as a special guest, and we're not going to tell Don that he's coming, and we're going to see if Don can figure out who it is. So, you guys got a chance to see, well, I know one of your good friends there in with one of our friends from here I guess he's fighting for Kathy now, Stevie USS, U.S. Cunningham.
Oh, man, that I tell you what, that was a tremendous fight. That was a tremendous fight between Stevie and Amir Mansour, just as far as entertainment and action value.
Yeah.
It's what, you know, people got their money's worth. They really did. And Stevie, as he does, man, Stevie, you can knock Stevie down, but he gets right back up. And he has, you know, amazing recuperative powers and amazing heart and the heart of a champion. And I think sometimes Stevie's been underestimated because he's not the biggest puncher and because he can be decked. But this is a two-time Cruiserweight world champion, and I think respect needs to be given to the man.
Yeah. Both men came to fight. That's for sure. So both men weren't intent on going anywhere. And Stevie put on a good performance. He put on a very, very good performance. He showed everything in the performance. He showed some good body punching. Because he kept setting the right up to the body. He showed good outside foot movement. And he showed toughness. He showed toughness and he showed heart that he had to get up. He was still some shots. He got put down roughly and brutally by two nice brutal knockdowns.
Mm-hmm.
But he got up. And then Ty and I saw that, he could survive a few moments afterward, and he'll be good. He'll mm-hmm. be good, and he did. And he went and he controlled the fight, essentially.
Yeah, he got dropped in the fifth. Twice. Hard right by Mansoor, and then he dropped him again. I think what was it, the seventh round?
No, he dropped him twice in the fifth. He dropped him
twice.
In the,
okay,
twice.
Yeah. But it is a credit to Johan and to Russell Peltz and their group to get these two guys together. You know, they have sparred quite a bit, so they knew what they were going into when they got in the ring. And Stevie has helped out a lot of other fighters, but it really was, from what I could see and what I read, must have been a tremendous fight.
You know, and these guys went at it tooth and nail, and you know, they are friendly acquaintances, and they went at it tooth and nail. They put the friendship aside, but after the fight, Stevie, went to Amir's dressing room, and he basically told Amir to keep his head up, that this could be a learning experience for him, because though Amir is 41, his body's still pretty fresh, relatively speaking, as far as boxing wear and tear. And Stevie offered himself. He said, if you need anything, let me know. If you need some sparring, give me a call. So, I mean, Stevie still extended out an olive branch to Amir. And to his credit, Amir Mansoor was extremely classy in the loss. He made no excuses whatsoever. We felt that, one of the scorecards was a little wide in Stevie's favor.
Yeah.
When asked about the scorecard, Amir said, hey, you want to fight? He said, hey, you want to fight? And what he actually said was he did his thing. I thought he was up on point. So Amir acknowledged that, I don't think I performed well enough to win that fight. The only thing Amir had issue with, and this is something Zito pointed out, when we were sitting there and we saw Steve Smoger gloving up to, putting his latex gloves on the referee to fight, the first thing we said to ourselves is we know we're not going to get a quick stoppage, which we believe we did in the fight prior to that, which we'll get to shortly. With that being said, there was a point when Stevie was hurt and got knocked down, where to some people, it appeared as though Steve Smoger gave Stevie Cunningham a little bit of extra time to recover. Amir Mansoor said the only issue he had, he thought that Steve Smoger counted past, that he thought the count went past 10. He said in his head he had counted past 10. The crowd also thought, in general, gauging the crowd, they also believed, and most on press row believed, that Steve Smoger bought Stevie Cunningham a few precious extra seconds. With that said, Amir said that was the only problem he had with Steve Smoger refereeing. He said he loved Steve Smoger. And he said even with that speaking, though, if he had been on the other hand, he wouldn't have wanted to be counted out. He said it's a double-edged sword. If the ref steps in, you wish he would have stopped the fight, but at the same time, if it were me, I wouldn't have wanted him to stop the fight. So it just comes with boxing. So Amir was very, very classy in his loss, and I hope that somehow he can rebound from this. His problem wasn't anything intangibly he brought to the ring. His problem was more tangible. It was more technique and swinging for the fences, as he said himself.
Yeah, and I have to agree with him. He wasn't satisfied with his performance, and I think I wasn't either, to be honest. And that was because he was swinging for the fences. He wasn't setting anything up. I mean, everything was predicated on hard shots. Every shot was hard, intended to be hard. And a fighter of Steve Cunningham's not only style but caliber, he's not going to get hit with most of those shots. And not only that, he's going to counter you. So, and then Stevie's going to set you up. And I thought maybe Amir would change up a little bit, various punches here and there, and then get his hard shots in. But, I mean, everything was telegraphed and hard. I mean, he was cocking back.
Extremely telegraphed.
And barroom fighting. I mean, dude, I'm going to be honest. It looked like he just got mad at Stevie. And said, I'm going to just kill you. And that's how he came to fight.
I was a little astonished by how crude Amir looked technically last night.
But with that said, he still got the Stevie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his hitting power cannot be questioned. But, I mean, he's
well, you know, and also one thing about Amir, and this is something that was brought up by a Boxing Scene interview. One thing they said about Amir is that, you know, it appeared to them that from a marketability standpoint, not necessarily from a competitive standpoint, but from a marketability standpoint, Amir kind of raised the stock because they put on, he and Stevie, you know, this was a crossroads fight where people actually were saying, you know, the loser of this fight might need to retire. And they really put on a hell of a fight. And both of them, because of the type of fight they put on national TV, are viable B-side opponents to, you know, an attractive A offer who might fight on TV. All of a sudden, you can make a Stevie Cunningham Thomas Ademik 3. You know what you could do? Ademik just came off a loss. You could make a Amir Mansour Thomas Ademik fight. That fight is marketable now. Why? Because they're going to say, you know what, one thing about Mansour, he's going to try to kill this guy, and he's a tough dude. You know what I mean? Because those are two attributes he proved, and those are two attributes that not everybody brings to the ring.
You know, I asked Kathy on Wednesday night about Ademik and the, you know, what if we'd see him back in the ring by the end of the year. And her answer, quite frankly, was he's going to take some time off. He's going to get back to Poland with his family, and he's just going to rest for a while. And we don't know what we're going to do. So I guess,
I wouldn't be surprised if Ademik called it a career, honestly.
Yeah. I had seen something last week in Fight News that said he was thinking about just retiring. But we know everybody else that retired came back, so why shouldn't he?
Sure. But you know what's funny, boy? Something that doesn't get talked about a lot, Vegeta, is how good Ademik was. Ademik really should go down as one of the better fighters of this generation, of this era. If you think about it, the guy's a former light heavyweight champion, and he only lost to Chad Dawson at light heavyweight, you know, when Chad Dawson was at his best. He also was a cruiserweight champion, and then he made a lot of noise as a heavyweight contender. He got to the number one contendership. So, I mean, this is a guy who's really accomplished a lot in his career. It doesn't get spoken of enough. When we talk about Thomas Ademik, we always talk about what type of fighter he is, but we really don't speak of his accomplishments. This is a guy, you know, could possibly, based on accomplishments, be a borderline Hall of Famer. Had he put a nail into a heavyweight championship coffin, he definitely could probably be a Hall of Famer.
Sure.
When you think about it, Thomas Ademik, who has he lost to? What was his losses?
He lost
Chad
to Chad
Dawson.
Dawson, who at one time was the lineal light heavyweight champion and also considered, you know, the undisputed best light heavyweight at the time.
So he lost to Klitschko and Dawson.
Yeah, and then he just lost this fight. But again, and you know what?
I also thought he lost to Stevie too, but that's
for another story.
Yeah, well, I'm saying technical losses. So really, the man. I mean, and he's fought good competition.
Yeah,
he's always.
Yeah.
He beat Chris Ariola at heavyweight. Right now, Chris Ariola is a top heavyweight. That has to be said, but he is a top heavyweight. And he went and cleanly beat Chris Ariola. He was beating him up with boxing to a point. Thomas Ademik is a heck of a fighter. I mean, so he, at any weight, he's a heck of a fighter. And I would love to see him fight Amir.
Sure.
I would like to see him have to keep Amir off of him.
Well, yeah, the other one I was really interested in, did you get a chance to see our good friend Edner Cherry Bomb Cherry?
You know, we actually, we missed Cherry. Edner was, unfortunately, the very first fight, and we were running a little bit late and got a little bit misplaced, so to speak, as we were driving to Philadelphia. And we unfortunately missed Cherry. he did win a unanimous decision, suffered a pretty bad cut, so he wasn't around when we got around, so we unfortunately didn't get a chance to talk to him.
Did you get a chance to talk to Dan Birmingham?
No, we didn't. No, we didn't see Dan either.
Yeah, after you text me, I text Dan and congratulated him, and he was saying, you know, I said thank you, and he was going to look for you guys.
We did see a good buddy of yours from Notre Dame.
Ah, Mr. Lee?
Mr. Subway Lee. Himself, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes,
he got a six-round stoppage.
Yeah, oh boy, did he. there was nothing early about that one. He stopped him nice and clean.
Yeah, yeah, he put him down hard, and the guy got up. He was still a little wobbly. The ref let it continue, and Lee went in and finished the job on.
Yeah, he.
And you know what? One thing I have to say that Zito noticed early on was that Mike wasn't with Ronnie Shields.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's going on there, but
we'll
get to the bottom of that because I have a call in for him now.
Well, you know, it's funny because Zito did a little bit of getting to the bottom of that last night. Instead of being with Ronnie Shields, he was in the ring with Chris Byrd. And Zito had a chance to talk to Chris Byrd and, you know, speak a little bit on certain things. So.
Nice. Zito, did you say you got his number, got Byrd's number?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
we'll get him on for next week.
Yeah, we try to get him on the show, no doubt.
Sure. You know, it's one of the guys that Dan Birmingham also is working with is Jeff Lacy, and I see Jeff
coming back. I thought Jeff Lacy had hung them up, so to speak.
Well, you guys know at the end of the program, we have a call of duty of some of the fallen officers. Four of those guys at the end of at the top of the list after Bobby was Sergeant Tom Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, and Patrolman David Crawford. Those guys were all killed by Jeff Lacey's brother. He hit up in the attic of a house when they went to get him, and he took shot Yaz in the throat and in the head, and then tied his legs so that the SWAT team was trying to get up there to get him out. They thought he was still alive, and it's a very sad story. He came down with heavy shots and killed Tom Batinger and Dave Crawford. So it's nice to see Jeff get back in the ring. I know he was going through some serious mental problems afterwards, and he was almost ostracized by the full community down in St. Pete. So
wow.
It's good to see him. And I'm sure that Dan will have him in excellent shape. I know he took Edner, who hadn't fought in over a year because of legal wranglings with his former management team. And he whipped him into shape, and from what I understand, he did a great job in the ring last night.
You know, one thing about Dan Birmingham is he's a teacher. He's not just a guy who's going to get you ready for the fight. You know, just in speaking to him, he's a teacher. He's a true practitioner of the sweet science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan has a gym up on the 49th Street in St. Pete. It's called St. Pete Gym. Some of the guys that have come through there are just tremendous people also. I mean, you got Winky Wright, Ronald Winky White. Winky has raised, in the last 10 years, has raised over $1 million for All Children's Hospital with running different golf tournaments and benefits. And you have Jeff Lacy, who, aside from the other thing, had been a guy who would go into the schools and would actually work with kids that were what we would call, what they call them now, we used to call them track kids. What do they call them now, Ty? I mean, what's the politically correct for kids who just don't want to be there and spend most of the time
in
SAS.
Yeah, we're talking about the at-risk youth, yes.
Right, right. Jeff has done a great job with them, and I'm not really sure because I haven't followed up with him, but he had done a tremendous job in the city of Tampa and in St. Petersburg working with those kids after school, going into the schools, setting up gyms, and not charging a cent, but giving his time back to the community. So, you know, he really is a tremendous guy as far as I'm concerned. But we got Mr. Tyson Fury is getting ready for Derek Chisora, huh?
Well, that's a fight that's going to be big in the UK. Not as big, obviously, as Flash Groves 2 and Wembley, but that's a fight that's going to be big. And the promotion itself has already started with the bang. We talked about Tyson Fury flipping over the table, which seemed extremely staged to most of the boxing public at the time.
Sure.
Yeah, that fight should be interesting, depending on Chisora's shape.
Right.
I mean, if Chisora comes to fight, then he's going to take Tyson Fury through hell. That it depends how Tyson Fury, if he's ready for that level of hell, how he's going to do. If Chisora doesn't come in shape, Tyson Fury, by about round three or four, Tyson Fury is going to start beating the hell out of him.
And you know, it goes to say something about a fighter coming in tip-top shape, ready to go 15 rounds for a 12-round fight. And a guy like that who puts pressure on you and who's durable, he can give anybody hell. That's what happened to Curtis Stevens last night. He ran into Reyes Johnson, who from the Bahamas, who no one had heard of, 14-0, 10 knockouts. And that guy was ready to go 15 rounds for a 12-round fight, and he gave Curtis Johnson hell for all but probably the last minute of the fight.
Yeah, which we figured was an early stoppage. And I'm looking at the judges' scorecards now, and they two of them gave Stevens one round.
Wow.
What would happen is Stevens, Stevens is an explosive, he's an explosive guy, he's an explosive athlete. So, he lets go, with quick, hard shots. And they're very eye-catching, but it wasn't enough. Those brief flurries weren't enough to offset the work that was being done against him for 3 minutes of every round by Johnson. And I think Johnson proved his worth.
And we were equating it with Glenn Johnson, Roy Jones fight to a point to where Johnson came out and immediately pushed Stevens to the ropes. So Stevens found himself all fight long in a counterpunching position, and Johnson just outworked him, landed some good shots, took some very good shots, but he ate the shots and he kept working. He kept coming back, and Stevens seemed to couldn't keep up with that pace. Couldn't keep up with getting hit in the body, getting, uppercuts, even through his defense. He had pretty good defense, but that was just up-top guard defense. He didn't really move his head defensively. He didn't move his feet at all defensively. He would turn Johnson, but then Johnson would turn him back to the ropes. So most of the fight, he's fighting with his guard up, with his back to the ropes, trying to find openings while he's getting hit, getting punished. It didn't look good for him, to be honest. In moments,
Stevens admitted in the press conference that he fought the wrong fight, that he submitted himself, submitted to Johnson by allowing himself to go back to the ropes. He said he was looking for the big shots because he felt he could knock him out, and he saw the shots were there, were presenting themselves. And he said he got caught fighting the wrong fight. Acknowledge that. As far as the stoppage is concerned, I personally thought it was quick. Zito thought it was quick. The crowd thought it was quick. Most impressed Will thought it was quick. But the illustrious Don Turner pointed something out to Zito and I as he approached this, as we were sitting in press row. He He asked us what we thought of the fight, and we both expressed that we, you know, thought it was a quick stoppage. One thing he pointed out was maybe, but Curtis Stevens had to be durable to be able to still land the punches he landed to allow that to happen in the 10th round. So you got to give Stevens, you take your hat off to Curtis Stevens as well, who though in my opinion was fighting a losing effort, and the judge's opinion was fighting a losing effort, he was still durable and tough enough and still maintained his composure, mostly maintained his composure to set up good shots to eventually get Johnson out of there. So you got to give Curtis credit. And that's the one thing Amir didn't do. And Amir was one of the ones who acknowledged that. He said Stevie maintained his composure much better than he did. And you could see the nervous energy with Amir when he first came out. And then throughout the fight, his technique just, you know, it abandoned him just significantly worse. He just lost composure. Curtis always maintained composure, and he was able to land up those punches. So you got to give him a little bit of credit. But Johnson and Gary Shaw are calling for an immediate rematch, so we'll see what happens in that.
That'll be good. Yeah. Just have to stay away from that left hook that hurt him so badly.
Oh, it hurt him bad. It hurt him badly. He lost his switch momentarily.
Yeah.
You know what? It's one of those things, though, when I look at the stoppage, the first thing I said was, man, it'd be great if like the old days, they'd give a fighter a standing A count. Because that's one that, you know, if anything, it could have been a standing A count. But, you know, the guy was still on his feet. He wasn't defenseless. The barrage had really just started to take hold. He was definitely hurt, but the ref did intervene a little quickly.
Yeah, and after the fight, they were telling us that there's no standing eight count in PA.
Oh, so there you go.
Hey, I've seen three or four different changes on the upcoming Pulev fight. Who do you think is going to be the final one? Do you think Danny Hughes is going to fight him or not?
You know, once you start getting changes, you just don't know. Like Johnson took this week against Stevens on 4 weeks' notice. That's something we didn't know going in, which even is a more credit, you know, to his performance. You know, a lot of times when you don't know who you're going to fight, man, it gets a little tenuous because you train for a different style. One thing I completely remember was that Evander Holyfield was supposed to fight Mike Tyson. That didn't come off because of Tyson's incarceration. Then things changed in camp, and he was supposed to fight, I think, Michael Moore. He ended up fighting Burt Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And the style switch really kind of cut him off guard. He went from fighting a taller guy to a smaller guy. And so Pulev is a guy that a lot of people have their eyes on as far as being one of the people they're looking to step up in the heavyweight division. So, you know, he just has to not take his eye off the prize. Obviously, it's not looking like he's going to necessarily fight the level of competition that his management was looking for, but if nothing else, it could be a stay-busy fight for him.
Yeah.
And Pulev does have that win over Tony Thompson as well. So.
Yeah, Tony called earlier. He was going to be on with us tonight and talk about his wonderful trip to Dubai and his win over there, but something came up with the family, so he won't be able to be on with us, but we're going to try and get him back next week.
Tony's one who I think could really speak to Amir in a sense as far as being a little, you know, an older heavyweight, but still being able to improve at this age, because that's something that Tony's talked about Tony's 43, 42?
Yeah.
But that's something Tony's talked about, being able to improve even as he relaxes more because of he has more wisdom in the game, but being able to improve technically and fundamentally. And that's, you know, from what we saw last night, that's something Amir could benefit from. So.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, definitely, the word you just said, relax. He gets
very relaxed.
It looked like Amir could have relaxed a little bit.
Uh-huh.
He fought hard, and he had all of the heart in the world. He took some good shots. He took a lot of good shots. And he ate them, and he kept coming forward. But, I mean, his technique cost him. He didn't set anything up. That cost him. And
sure.
I do think that the relaxation plays a big part in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amir, this is a guy who basically by round eight was dead tired on his feet. And he never stopped punching, never stopped coming forward. Even when he got knocked down, it kind of reminded me of Rumble in the Jungle knockdown, where Ali staggered for him and caught him with a straight right and hurt him. But, you know, it was also as much of exhaustion and frustration and defeat had kind of set in. And it was the same thing with Amir. You know, he kind of staggered in the same way, and his glove hit. He didn't go all the way down, his glove hit. And you could see the expression on his face that frustrated him. He was defeated. And that's why it was, you know, one thing about Amir is he obviously wears his emotions on his sleeve, because he was very honest about what he thought transpired in the ring, and it showed all over his face. And, you know, he was dead tired, but not because I think he wasn't in shape. I think at 222, Amir looked really good. His problem was that, like Zito said, he doesn't set up his punches. He was throwing every single thing into his punch. So when he would miss, he would go flying across the ring. Mm-hmm. And that just takes a lot out of you. He was essentially doing high-intensity training while fighting a fight. And, you know, you just can't win that way.
Yeah, and to a certain point, he was doing a lot of the work for Stevie.
Yeah, he was. He was. He made the fight easier for Stevie. As grueling as that fight was, Amir made it easier for Stevie than he needed to. All things being equal, Amir could have won that fight had he just relaxed and sharpened his technique. And you know, I'm not saying anything that Amir didn't say in his own interview after the fight.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you think? Well, we're getting close to Timothy Bradley and Pacquiao again, and Timothy says he's going to war. What do you think about that one?
That's probably the last thing Timothy wants to do. But he's talking a good game, and he might be talking himself into getting knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Just because if Pacquiao gets the thought that Timothy can't really hurt him, I mean, he can hit him with some tough shots, but he can't hurt him, the Pacquiao might just start walking Timmy down or running Timmy down, because I think Pacquiao has quicker feet. And that can be a problem.
You know, Tim Bradley saying he's going to war with Pacquiao reminds me of The Untouchables, when the movie, when Sean Connery says to the Italian gangster, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Right.
And unfortunately, when it comes to ammunition, Tim Bradley's carrying a knife and Manny Pacquiao's carrying missiles. So instead of going to war, I believe Tim Bradley should go to espionage. He should not be there. He should use flanks. He should assassinate, meaning attack from angles. He should never go to war with Pacquiao. He can't win that fight. And I think that's just part of the bravado he's speaking. I don't think Tim Bradley has any intent on going to war. I think Provinikoff was the last time you're going to really see Tim Bradley go to war. I think Tim Bradley knows he's a versatile fighter, and I think he knows he can do just about anything in the ring. And I think he's going to have to do everything that he can do to win the fight. Going to war is not one of those things he can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that, well, I think proven in the first fight, I mean, Timmy says he had two bad feet. But I don't think Timmy can box his way into beating Pacquiao. I just don't think he as good. And Timmy's a tremendous boxer. He's a tough boxer. He could do everything but hit hard. The only thing is Timmy, I mean, he has habits. Timothy has habits. He will leave his hands down in moments. He will think that he's going to outquit Pacquiao. He'll sit there and trade for a second.
Yeah.
With his head up and wide punches. And his boxing acumen is good, but he has bad habits that are getting, and it cost him in the first Pacquiao fight. I think Pacquiao, knowing these habits, he could settle down a little more, he could plan a little more, and that's going to be a little problem with Timmy. Timothy's feet are not as fast as Pacquiao, so I mean, how's he going to get away?
Yeah.
You know, one thing about Tim Bradley, too, is Tim Bradley is a guy who I think he and his team formulated a pretty good game plan, typically. And I think Tim is also a lunch pail guy. He's a guy, he's a worker bee. You know, he's tough, he's durable, and he's a guy that will, you know, outwork you in every phase of the game. I mean, that's his bread and butter. What I haven't seen from Tim Bradley, though, is the ability to adjust on the fly. He wasn't able to do that against Protnikov. He wasn't able to do that against Pacquiao. To me, it was more a case of what Pacquiao was failing to do as the rounds went on, as of what Timmy does. What Timmy does, though, is he keeps trying. He tries harder and harder and harder. And, you know, to this point, he's undefeated. Be that, you know, think of what you may about the Pacquiao fight. But to this point, he's an undefeated fighter. And he always has been able to find a way to win. And, again, I think his bread and butter has just been outworking his opponent. Don't know if that's going to get that done in that, you know, in this fight against Pacquiao.
When you're a lunch pail guy, compared to the explosive guy, the lunch pail guy needs rounds, where the explosive guy needs moments. And you're going to get more moments than rounds if they're both consistent.
You know what makes Pacquiao tough is Pacquiao is he's durable too, and with Pacquiao actually is an explosive lunch pail guy, because not only does he hit hard, is he explosive and fast, but he also can outwork his opponents as well. And
he's working to hit hard.
yeah, you know. So I, to me, stylistically, Pacquiao is one of the worst matchups for Tim Bradley. Pacquiao's not the best at fighting going backwards, but Tim Bradley is not the best at fighting going forwards, believe it or not. He's more of a mauler going forwards, and it just, you know, Pacquiao's a competent enough counterpuncher to where he can, you know, really hurt Tim Bradley when Tim Bradley steps in. So there's really, you know, not too many, even, you know, there's not too many clear paths in my mind to victory for Tim Bradley outside of, you know, him just, you know, really just outworking Pacquiao, maybe just making it an ugly fight, you know, a la Sean Porter, Devin Alexander. But Pacquiao has more game than Devin Alexander, so.
Yeah, okay. And Pacquiao, I mean, well, more or less, Bradley, he could get away with an inside fight because Pacquiao doesn't fight on the inside. Mm-hmm. So Bradley, he would have to, I mean, to get it ugly, he would have to get totally inside. And more or less try to stay there as much as he can, because base and distance doesn't favor Bradley.
And you know what? Even getting inside, his best bet is to have Pacquiao up against the ropes and be inside and mauling him. If he's inside in the middle of the ring, Pacquiao, with his foot speed, takes a half step back or a half step to the side, and bang, next thing you know, Bradley's down. Or his ankle's broken again.
And one gift that Bradley has against mostly everybody else that he doesn't have against Pacquiao, evened up, is his conditioning. Bradley is one of the best conditioned fighters out there. I mean, he's to be as durable, to keep throwing punches as he does, for 12 rounds, the guy is extremely durable. But Pacquiao himself is going to be out there for 12 rounds, dancing around, throwing hard, and he'll get hit, but he's just as durable. So that's not an advantage Bradley's going to have.
What do you think about Luis Ortiz thumping Monty Barrett in the fourth round?
Oh, man, look, yeah, he dominated Monty. Obviously, Monty is well primed, and, you know, he's just coming back from his professional wrestling venture. So, you know, Luis Ortiz, he's an undefeated, you know, Cuban fighter. And so those are always people that you have to, you know, kind of keep your eye on to a certain extent, because, you know, the skill level is going to be magnificent. The question would be, though, in regards to a Cuban heavyweight, is the battle of the bulge is usually what they're fighting. And I think Tony Thompson can tell you the best, because he just beat Orlando Solis, I should say. And that's the guy who's let his weight balloon. And, again, that's been the question mark surrounding the Cuban athletes. So we'll see how Luis Ortiz pans out.
Yeah. And it seems like the heavier you are as far as a Cuban athlete, that it that pertains more.
Mm-hmm. You know, I tell you, two guys who really, really keep themselves in shape and really seem dedicated to the craft are Orlando and Guillermo Rigondeaux. Yorioki Scamboa, he's had his promotional issues, so, yeah.
Hey, you know, talk about promotional issues. Did you see that Deontay Wilder is now, he's got his first fight that he's putting on. It's tonight.
Oh, he's promoting.
Yeah.
Smart move.
Yeah.
Smart move. Smart move.
Yeah.
Smart move.
Okay. He's going it early. Huh?
It's tonight down
so
in
instead
Alabama.
Instead of Golden Boy, we'll have, yeah, instead of Golden Boy promotions, we'll have Bronze Boy promotions, I guess.
Yeah, I meant to tell you that earlier when I first saw that. Finally, after many, many years of a statue of a guy who supposedly was a boxer, Philadelphia is finally going to get a real boxer statue. And I'm glad that Bernard
Yusuf Mack is getting it? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bernard Hopkins announced that the Golden Boy production has made a significant donation for the completion of the Joe Frazier statue. And
finally.
Yep. It's going to stand 9 feet tall, and it'll be outside the Xfinity Live in the Philadelphia Stadium area. So,
Outstanding.
Originally where the Rocky statue is, we're going to finally have a real boxer from Philadelphia with a real statue. And it's only fitting that the guy was one heck of a guy, did a great job in the ring and out of the ring, and was a real credit to the Cloverleaf organization and to the city of Philadelphia, and brought a lot of good press and good luck to the city. That's good that that's finally going to come about.
And that's extremely classy. I mean, that's class personified. And
right.
For Philadelphia boxer to give a legendary Philadelphia boxer, I mean, to contribute that,
yep.
I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be in
sure.
boxing.
Sure.
And you know, every time a Philadelphia fighter throws a left hook, he's paying homage to Joe Frazier.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I think I mentioned to you before, my two uncles were principals in that Cloverleaf organization. And when Joe would have would make a big pot, they invested it for him. And had he lived, he could have lived on infinitum and still had some cash left. The only downside in Joe's career was he really wanted to have a barbecue place, and he opened one up on 53rd and City Line Avenue, and they really was doing a great business till one night some punks came in and held the place up and herded all his employees into a freezer and then shot them in the freezer, and Joe never went back into business after he closed the restaurant. He took care of the families, being the gentleman that he is and the kind of guy he is. And he got some of the organization to raise money for their families. But that was the only flaw in his life. And it wasn't a flaw that he had created, but he certainly did, come out, as classy a person as he always was. So,
you know, talking about Joe Frazier today, and after watching, compact heavyweight power puncher last night, it instantly makes me think of Papa Smurf, Eddie Futch, and
mm-hmm.
just how he trained Joe Frazier. And
right.
you know, and again, we got to speak to Don Turner, and it just makes me really miss how that era is starting to leave and pass by. And you know, when people say we don't have the great trainers that we used to, we do, but you don't see them in bulk, in mass,
mm-hmm.
like we used to. So,
Few and far between. And we have, I mean, you have a lot of motivators. I mean, people, trainers, but they're more motivators.
Right.
And they can tell you to do stuff harder. And you have more of that than you have somebody teaching you. That when you throw a jab, you put your shoulder up to block your chin a bit. I mean, you don't have, you know, trainers to say when you throw to the body, you kind of want to keep your chin tucked. So it's things are, I mean, you just don't have, you know, proper teaching. You have more,
you know,
motivational speaking than actual, you know, learning going on.
And, you know, we saw a guy last night who's pretty good at both, who's a pretty good motivational speaker, but he's a hell of a teacher, and that's one I've seen, Richardson. And obviously he learned at the feet of the legendary Bowie Fischer. And when you watch Bernard Hopkins fight, you watch Stevie Cunningham fight, you know, Stevie tends to make his mistakes, it's a lot of times because Stevie tends to get a little greedy. But these are guys who typically, they throw textbook punches. They throw the hook, and when they throw the hook, they hide their chin behind their shoulders. And you know, you don't, like, I see Floyd Mayweather throw the hook, and he doesn't do that. You know, he's fast enough where he can just shoot it. But these guys, they throw the hook, and they bring their chin with them behind their shoulders. And when they throw the right, there's no arc on it. It's straight from the shoulder. I mean, these are guys who are picture-perfect in what they do. And that's what beat Amir last night. That's what beat Amir. It was Stevie's craft. You know, Stevie had to show heart, but it was his craft that won the day. It was his skill that won the day. And that's what's, you know, not being passed down, I think, as frequently as it used to be. It's not quite as prolific as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Amir, as I said before, he did a lot of work for Stevie, but that was only on offense. Defensively, Amir wasn't easy to hit. I mean, he had good defense. He had very good defense. He was very slick. He saw punches coming. He did a very good job of avoiding Stevie's initial offenses. Well, I mean, well, mostly early. When it became late, he got tired. It was a little different. So early, he was good defensively avoiding them. It was his offense that would get him into trouble. His offense often put him out of position. His feet were together a bit. So when Stevie hit him, he would seem to be that much more off balance, and the punch would look like it meant that much more. And he's throwing hooks, and he's throwing his whole back to Stevie. So when he's coming back around, he's not coming back with his hand up. He's coming back trying to throw another hook.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was so much out of position that he did a lot of the work for Stevie, and that was just totally offense. So, I mean, certain things, the good teacher could tighten up on. Not to just use Amir as an example, but, you know, he's a prominent fighter right now that I guess I can use an example with.
Mm-hmm.
No disrespect. So, I mean, just good teacher could teach you just the subtle nuances of shortening your punches up to a point to where you throw a couple of short punches, then you could come with some looping punches or a looping punch or two. You can't always do that. So,
mm-hmm. Wow, this has been the fastest hour I think we've ever gone through. And I guess Chris didn't plug in his phone. I had talked to him earlier, and he said, yeah, calling at 6:15. But Dr. Chris will be on with us next week. We're going to have Tony Thompson. And if you'll kindly text me those numbers, I'll get those guys on. And Wednesday night we're going to have Edner's coming on the other show, and I'll talk to him about coming on here. But, again, we want to thank Kathy Duva and Ellen Haley for their gracious hostess with the mostess and the and being very great, being very helpful for our staff. I do want to make sure that everybody knows they do have a fight coming up the end of May. It's up at the Harris Casino up in Bethlehem, PA, another big promotion with Russell Peltz. So, you know, it's going to be, they don't have it lined up yet, but it'll be a big card. Also, we have a card coming up in Dover, Delaware, the week of the 26th of April by Champ Sports Management. And we'll have, I know in that that card, that two of the fighters will be on there will be the new Ray Patterson.
The new!
And our good friend, Joey Tabiri. So between now and then, we'll have them on here to talk about their fights that are coming up. If there's anybody who wants to hear anything else about fights, let us know. Guys, I want to thank you for everything. I want to thank you for being there last night. It was a thrill to know that you guys were going to be at a fight when I was fighting for our life. We did the Tampa Bay Storm did beat the Philadelphia Soul 63-42. So and then this morning, Ty Anthony Basso, also known as Ty Anthony Basso Carroll, did a fantastic job, and those kids ended up in winning their division. And Trevor Basso Carroll was the starting goalie for his team today, and he saved seven goals, and he was kicking that ball 60 yards out of the goal box. So I am one great proud grandparent. So, guys, you want to lead us out, Ty?
Well, it's been a great show, and you know, we want to thank Main Events, Kathy Duva, Ellen Haley, Butch. We want to thank you for arranging the press credentials for us. Zito, it was a pleasure going to the fights with you last night. You did a great job talking to Chris Byrne, getting the interviews that you did. We hope to have those up on YouTube for you guys shortly. It's been a great week. We look forward to seeing you next week. Bob is our co-pilot. Z?
I definitely want to thank Main Events, Kathy Duval and Russell Pulse Promotion, and all of their staff. They were very hospitable. Everything was fine and everything was comfortable. I want to thank you, Ty. It was wonderful. We can't wait till we do it again. Butch, I want to thank you very much for setting everything up and organizing it. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
Okay. We want to thank all our fans worldwide, and especially those local. We appreciate each and every one of you. We want to thank Zito and Ty and all the guys at Dan Birmingham and Edner Cherry and Stevie Cunningham. I'm going to try and get Stevie on in a couple weeks and talk to him again. For those of you interested, Russell Peltz will be on our Wednesday show right here on the same time, same place. And we'll have him talk about some things that he has coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every week, every night of the week, in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, a simple thank you for what you do means a world of goodness to each and every one. I've never seen one of my men or women that work for me not smile when somebody says that to them. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman Jeffrey Culcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Bell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford of the Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, the Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, and Officer Robert Germain of the Windermere, Florida Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rain fall softly on your fields and the sun show softly on your face. Till we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hand. Good night.
Shem alek ma yelama Shake my head, I hear my soul, I shake my voice, I swear, I could again, my head, my
County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised. 1999 has now answered his last call. May God rest his soul. Bye, Bob. We miss you. We love you.